I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. European leaders met in London Sunday to discuss Russia's war in Ukraine. Ukraine's president received a warm welcome days after being asked to leave the White House following a heated exchange with U.S. President Donald Trump. VOA's Arash Arvasati has more.
World leaders gathered in London Sunday for a summit to discuss the future of Ukraine's war with Russia. 3 years into the bloody conflict, leaders at a roundtable discussion told Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky he would have their continued support. The warm welcome in Europe stood in contrast to U.S. President Donald Trump's heated exchange with Zelensky in the Oval Office during his visit last week. Ukraine's president was there to sign a rare earth mineral deal with the U.S.
But you're either going to make a deal or we're out. And if we're out, you'll fight it out. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but you'll fight it out. But you don't have the cards. But once we sign that deal, you're in a much better position. But you're not acting at all thankful. And that's not a nice thing.
Democrats in the United States Congress say this is the wrong time to abandon an ally. Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar speaking Sunday on ABC's This Week as provided by X.
The soldiers that I just saw last weekend from Ukraine who were getting medical help with hook arms trying to stand up for the Ukrainian national anthem with one leg, you know, this is not the time for us to undermine these brave Ukrainians.
For the Ukrainian soldiers, some badly injured still staffing the front lines, a peace deal may not come soon enough. Arash Arvasati, VOA News.
This is VOA News. Israel blocked the entry of aid trucks into Gaza on Sunday as a standoff over the truce that has halted fighting for the past 6 weeks escalated, with Hamas calling on Egyptian and Qatari mediators to intervene. Reuters correspondent Diane Toe reports.
The first phase of the previously agreed ceasefire expired on Saturday, and talks for a second phase have yet to begin. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told a cabinet meeting on Sunday the country has agreed to a U.S. proposal for a temporary ceasefire in Gaza. The truce proposes to halt fighting until after the Muslim Ramadan holy month and the Jewish Passover holiday ending around April 20th. Ramadan began on Saturday with thousands of Palestinians seen sitting together between piles of rubble in Gaza for the first break of their daily fast in the evening. The proposed truce requires Hamas to release half of the living and dead hostages on the first day. The remainder are to be released at the end if a deal is reached on a permanent ceasefire. But Hamas has rejected the idea of a temporary extension and called on mediators Egypt and Qatar to intervene. It said it was committed to the originally agreed ceasefire, with second phase talks aimed at a permanent end to the war.
Reuters correspondent Diane Toe. The Vatican says Pope Francis remains in stable condition and no longer needs oxygen from a ventilator, a sign that his respiratory function is improving as he continues his recovery from double pneumonia and a respiratory crisis. The 88-year-old Pope did continue to receive high-flow supplemental oxygen on Sunday after a coughing episode on Friday, which sparked fears of a new infection. Former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has announced that he's running for mayor of New York City. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Cuomo Sunday holding a rally at the Carpenters Union.
We are here because we love New York and we know New York City is in trouble.
He stepped down following sexual harassment allegations from at least 11 women, which he denies. His critics also point to nursing home deaths during COVID. But Cuomo criticizes his opponents and says he's the right candidate out of the crowded Democratic field.
We are here because we know we can turn New York City around.
Cuomo wants more police and tougher action on crime and homelessness. His biggest challenger right now, Mayor Eric Adams, who's trying to get his federal corruption charges dismissed. Julie Walker, New York.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. European leaders meet with Ukraine's president to discuss the war with Russia.
I'm saying it's 0% likely if we don't get them to a negotiating table. And the sooner everyone grows up around here and figures out that this is a bad war that's heading in a bad direction with death and destruction and all kinds of dangers surrounding it that could spiral into a broader conflict.
President Trump plans to address a joint session of Congress tomorrow, Tuesday evening. We'll hear the views of some Kenyans on what they say President Trump and U.S. lawmakers should know about Africa. UNICEF says worsening insecurity in the DRC rebel-controlled cities is making it difficult to feed and care for thousands of children and women. Kenya's rebranded People's Liberation Party says it wants to liberate the country come the 2027 presidential election.
We want to liberate Kenyans from all forms of oppression. In other words, we want to liberate Kenyans from economic, political, and social ills that are disabling Kenya.
And we'll look at the impact of the work of returned Peace Corps volunteers. Those stories plus Samson Omalley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. European leaders met in London on Sunday to discuss the Ukraine-Russia war. Ukraine's president received a warm welcome days after being asked to leave the White House following a heated exchange with President Donald Trump. VOA's Arash Arabasadiri has more.
World leaders gathered in London Sunday for a summit to discuss the future of Ukraine's war with Russia. 3 years into the bloody conflict, leaders at a roundtable discussion told Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky he would have their continued support. The warm welcome in Europe stood in contrast to U.S. President Donald Trump's heated exchange with Zelensky in the Oval Office during his visit last week. Ukraine's president was there to sign a rare earth mineral deal with the U.S., but things took a turn in front of news cameras.
But you're either going to make a deal or we're out. And if we're out, you'll fight it out. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but you'll fight it out. But you don't have the cards. But once we sign that deal, you're in a much better position. But you're not acting at all thankful. And that's not a nice thing.
Trump's top diplomat repeated the president's position Sunday that Zelensky risks World War III by continuing to fight. Adding an end to this war comes through mediation and not on the battlefield.
I'm saying it's 0% likely if we don't get them to a negotiating table. And the sooner everyone grows up around here and figures out that this is a bad war that's heading in a bad direction with death and destruction and all kinds of dangers surrounding it that could spiral into a broader conflict, the sooner people grow up and realize that, I think the more progress we're going to be able to make.
Meanwhile, Ukrainian soldiers severely wounded and with amputated body parts returned to combat. They joined what Zelensky describes as 380,000 Ukrainians wounded in the war. Democrats in the United States Congress say this is the wrong time to abandon an ally.
The soldiers that I just saw last weekend from Ukraine who were getting medical help with hook arms trying to stand up for the Ukrainian national anthem with one leg, you know, this is not the time for us to undermine these brave Ukrainians.
And as the wounded population of Ukraine grows, so too do calls for peace talks.
We have to give peace a chance. We have to give, to create the circumstances in which enough pressure is brought on Putin, on Russia, to bring them, to coax them, to force them to the negotiating table. But if it goes wrong, we must be there on Ukraine's side.
For the Ukrainian soldiers, some badly injured still staffing the front lines, a peace deal may not come soon enough. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
The need to end the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, the imposition of tariffs by the United States on other countries, and the downsizing of the U.S. federal government. Those are some of the topics that President Donald Trump is expected to highlight when he delivers the first address of his second term in office to Congress this week. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
As he did back in 2017, U.S. President Donald Trump is scheduled to address a joint session of Congress on Tuesday. The Russia-Ukraine war is expected to feature prominently in Trump's speech in the context of his administration's ongoing efforts to mediate peace negotiations between the parties in conflict.
I'm looking for peace. We're not looking to go into a 10-year war and play games. We want peace.
The U.S. leader could also update Congress on his stance on the Israel-Hamas war and the future of Gaza. During a joint press conference with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on February 4th, Trump suggested the U.S. transform Gaza into the, quote, Riviera of the Middle East.
The United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent.
During his speech at the Capitol, analysts also expect that Trump will speak about the rationale behind the U.S. imposing tariffs on other countries. Shannon Bo O'Brien is associate professor of instruction in the government department at the University of Texas at Austin. She spoke via Zoom.
I believe in his view, he believes that if he imposes tariffs, it's going to cause a rise in prices to cause manufacturers to have to come back to the United States to avoid those tariffs.
Trump could also push back on some criticism his administration has received over the speed and scope of its efforts to reduce government spending, cut fraud and waste, and slash the size of the federal workforce. Analyst Shannon Bo O'Brien via Zoom.
I think he's going to talk about it as a cost-saving measure. I believe he's going to talk about how great of a thing it is.
U.S. Senator Lisa Slotkin, a former CIA analyst, has been chosen to give the Democratic rebuttal to President Trump's address. Analyst O'Brien thinks Americans will probably follow Senator Slotkin's remarks and Trump's full address primarily on web streams or social media platforms on Tuesday night or read the highlights the following day. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
As U.S. President Donald Trump is set to address a joint session of Congress on Tuesday night, some Kenyans have expressed their views on what they say Trump and U.S. lawmakers should know about Africa.
President Trump should know that the relationship between Africa and America goes way back and that both continents have a symbiotic relationship. They benefit mutually from each other, and therefore we should maintain the status quo, improve on support, especially the discontinuation of the USAID to Africa. I think it's something they should relook at because it really helped the African continent.
Africa is the giant of the world in waiting. By that I mean the kind of resources that we have are huge. The only thing that is keeping us not to reach where the world is the technology to explore the natural resources, the technology to upgrade our agricultural system, technology to make everything flow. What I would want Trump to understand about Africa. We are heading somewhere. Currently, the population is young. The population is aggressive. The population has a lot of dreams, and they're pushing themselves to a better Africa.
The views of some Kenyans on what they think President Trump and U.S. lawmakers should know about Africa as Trump addresses a joint session of Congress tomorrow, Tuesday. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 3rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says worsening insecurity in the DRC rebel-controlled cities of Goma and Bukavu is making it extremely difficult to feed and care for thousands of children and women. John James is a communication specialist for UNICEF. He tells VOA's Chinedu Ofor that with the airport out of use, warehouses looted, and infectious diseases soaring, time is running out to save thousands of lives.
Within the these towns and cities, there's certainly been an increase in insecurity, grave violations against children, the sorts of major abuses against children in conflict situations. Overall, that's increased threefold since December. And what we've seen as well is just huge numbers of people move. Probably about 1 million people have been on the move in the last month, many of them either fleeing the conflict or moving from displacement camps. About 700,000 people were living around Goma, and now those camps are almost empty.
What are your biggest worries at the moment?
This is an escalation in the conflict that, you know, takes it to levels that hasn't been seen for many years, even if the region itself hasn't been entirely peaceful for the last couple of decades. But at the moment, I think a number of concerns. Protection of children is clearly key. We've seen a big increase in killings, in injuries, in sexual violence, in abductions. All these sorts of things have increased very rapidly. That's a big concern. The massive displacement as well has pushed children and families often away from places where they were going to school, often back to the areas where they originally were displaced. We have seen urban in some areas, like here in Goma, but attendance is well short of what it was before. In some cases, people are scared to school. They're worried about recruitment of children. Lots of rooms around. But in some cases, well, they've just left where the school is. So education as well. I think finally, just to speak about health, this is an area with a couple of major epidemics going on at the moment, cholera and Mpox. This has caused huge disruption to those care services, with more than 30 health facilities attacked or looted. And so that sort of isolation of people with Mpox has been an issue. And for cholera, you know, people don't have access to clean water anymore in many parts of the city. And so that is obviously something that can accelerate the spread of the disease.
Now, Mr. James, there are reports that warehouses, yours as well as those of other organizations, have been looted. The airport is not safe to bring in staff. So how are you able to feed? How are you able to take care of the medical needs of the hundreds of thousands of those who are now waiting for you to assist them in one way or the other?
Yeah, I mean, there's actually many factors that make it difficult to deliver humanitarian assistance at the moment. One of them, as you say, has been the looting. Our supplies weren't looted in Goma, but they were in Bukavu, this other city to the south. So that's taken a lot of supplies out of what we had to give to people in need. And that's true for many other organizations as well. Secondly, distribution of the supplies that we do have is becoming extremely difficult, because the airport here was the major logistics hub for the entire east of the country. And with that out of action, probably for a good time to come, means, you know, we really have questions about how we can deliver supplies to different areas. And I think finally, just to mention, it's a very difficult funding environment as well. You know, we've had a number of different governments over the last few weeks announced their major cuts in funding for humanitarian aid. And so that, of course, weighs heavily as well on the response. So,
that was John James, a communication specialist for UNICEF, speaking from Goma with VOA's Chinedu Ofuor. The founder of Kenya's rebranded People's Liberation Party, the PLP, says it aims to liberate the country from social, economic, and political oppression in the 2027 presidential election. Martha Karua says the PLP, formerly NAG Kenya, says that President Ruto should give way. Ruto has accused Karua and the PLP of lacking solutions to the country's problems, but only focusing on removing him from power. Karua tells me that the party will present its agenda to the country very soon.
It's not a new party. It's a rebrand, where we changed the name from NAG Kenya to People's Liberation Party. We changed our colors from red, green, and white to purple, lilac, and white. And we renewed our commitment to work for the best interests of the people.
You say you want to also liberate Kenya, as I was reading. So you want to liberate Kenya from whom?
Our slogan is Unite, Liberate. We want to liberate Kenyans from all forms of oppression, from abductions, executions, and forced disappearances, from lack of access to education, access to health, illegal demolitions, land grabbing. In other words, we want to liberate Kenyans from economic, political, and social ills that are bedeviling Kenya. And to do that, we need unity of purpose. And that's why you saw us standing together with other political parties. We need to unite to liberate ourselves from all those ills.
President Ruto says that you have no good solution for the country's problems. like housing, the economy. Instead, he said you are focusing your energy on removing him. Your comment?
He doesn't have the luxury of saying what we can or cannot do. When you are seated at the seat of power, you are the subject of audit, of being held accountable by the people. We have our agenda individually as parties, and very soon we will put to Kenyans our collective agenda. He's in a panic mode because his only survival would be dependent on divide and rule. And that's why he's preempting the presentation of our agenda to the people.
Madam, you mentioned unity in purpose, but you have some strong-willed individual members in your the rebranded party, like the former deputy president Gachagua, and yourself. Now, have you all decided who is going to be the face of the party or who will lead your ticket for the 2027 elections?
To begin with, not every leader who was present is a member of the People's Liberation Party. They are allies. They were from different parties, but parties in the opposition. We will, moving forward, be able to sit down, set ground rules as to how we shall elect or select one of us to be the flag bearer. But for now, every aspiring individual who wants to lead Kenya, we shall continue to grow our brands while coming together as a group on issues of national interest.
Martha Karua is the leader of Kenya's rebranded People's Liberation Party of Kenya, the PLP. She was speaking with us from Nairobi. The Peace Corps concluded Peace Corps Week over the weekend by observing March 1st, 1961, the day that President John Kennedy established the organization. Today, there are more than 3,000 Peace Corps volunteers working in more than 60 countries in different disciplines. Cyril Morrison is a member of Friends of Liberia, a group of returned volunteers who once served in the country. She tells me that their work not only helps to improve the countries where they have served, but impacts the U.S. as well.
Peace Corps Day, which is actually March 1st, is the day that President Kennedy signed the executive order back in 1961 to establish Peace Corps. The day is celebrated every year because it is such an important change in our country to have volunteers going out to other countries. And over these years, it's almost 65 years old, there have been more than 250,000 Peace Corps volunteers that have served in over 60 countries. So it's really been had a significant impact. One of the most important impacts, in my opinion, is what Peace Corps volunteers do when they come back. So it's really a two-way street. It improves the countries where we have served, but it also really, really impacts the United States. That's what we want the United States citizens to understand, especially these days.
Sarah, you are also a member of Friends of Liberia. Could you tell us about this group and its work in Liberia?
Friends of Liberia is one of the, what they call affiliate groups of Peace Corps volunteers that have formed after they've come back. Our group was formed so that volunteers could continue communicating with each other and appreciating Liberia. It was actually licensed as a nonprofit in 1986. But after the social aspect, it was realized that the volunteers wanted to continue to do things in Liberia. And so the Friends of Liberia formed in order to continue education projects and health projects. Right now we have an early childhood literacy program, an adult literacy program. We do health training, in-service training for nurses and midwives. And we have a small grants program that helps small nonprofits in Liberia to finance projects that may help their communities in different ways, like building wells or starting a pig farm or doing small things that really make a big difference in the country. And all of that work on the ground is done by
Liberians that we are in partnership with.
Does the freeze in U.S. Foreign assistance or USAID, does it impact your work in Liberia?
It doesn't impact Friends of Liberia work directly because we're funded totally by donors here in the United States and sometimes former Peace Corps volunteers who now live in other countries. But it does indirectly because some of our Liberian partners have other funding, including some from USAID.
Sarah Morrison is a member of Friends of Liberia, a group of returned Peace Corps volunteers who once served in the country. She was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with football. The first leg of the second qualification stage for the CAF African Nations Championship CHAN 2025 was concluded on Sunday with key results shaping the road to the next round. Malawi stunned Comoros with a decisive 2-0 away victory, while South Africa came from behind to secure a 1-1 draw against Egypt. The first fixture of the round played on Friday saw Gambia and Gabon share the spoils in the Golex encounter. Algeria coach Adel Amorucci has been appointed as the new head coach of the Rwandan national team, marking his return to the dugout. The Rwanda Football Federation, FEWAFA, confirmed his appointment on Sunday, with the former Tanzanian coach signing a 24-month contract. Amorucci will be tasked with revitalizing the Amavubi and guiding them to the 2027 CAF Africa Cup of Nations. He will be assisted by Eric Nishinimiana and Dr. Colin Baroon, forming a new-look technical team for Rwanda's national side. In athletics, Tadisi Takeli and Sutume Asefa Kibede, both Ethiopians, won their divisions of the Tokyo Marathon on a nearly perfect spring day in the Japanese capital. Takele won on the men's side in a personal best time of 2 hours, 3 minutes, 23 seconds. Countryman Derisi Gileta was second in 2 hours, 3 minutes, 51 seconds, with third for Vincent Kipkemoi Ngichich of Kenya in 2 hours and 4 minutes. On the women's side, Kibede led from start to finish to win her second straight Tokyo Marathon. She finished in 2 hours, 16 minutes, 31 seconds, followed by Winfrida Mura Musetti of Kenya in 2 hours, 16 minutes, 56 seconds, and Hawi Fiesa of Ethiopia came in third in a time of 2 hours, 17 minutes. And now to basketball, where the Basketball African League has announced the 12 teams and game schedule for the opening leg of the league's milestone fifth season, which will tip off with the Kalahari Conference group phase from April the 5th to the 13th in Rabat, Morocco. The 2025 BAL season, which will feature three regular season group phases and culminate with the playoffs and finals at the Sunbet Arena in Pretoria, South Africa, in June, will feature a record 6 first-time BAL participants, including the first BAL teams from Cape Verde, the Crew Star basketball team, and Kenya Nairobi City Thunder, as well as defending champions Petro de Luanda of Angola and 2022 champion U.S. Monastery from Tunisia. Petro de Luanda and U.S. Monastery are the only teams to have qualified for all the 5 BAL seasons. In cycling news, French cyclist Fabien Derbe of France was declared winner of the 17th edition of the Tour de Rwanda without competing in the final stage, which was cancelled in the middle of the race due to bad weather conditions. And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, March 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butting, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week. We'll